time for the In the Conversation podcast with funny man Damian Lemon and the voice of your choice, Ali Muhammad.
This is Damian Lemon, and this is In the Conversation, the podcast. Ali is not here this week, but in his place, we got a special guest host. Somebody we talked about for a while on the pod here and there. This should have happened a long time ago. A music industry bigwig, you know, been in the game for a while, built a hell of a career everywhere from Star Trek to Richcraft to BMI to Rostrum, all the way to Collabo Music, and the host of the Sir Lab podcast, which is killing the game right now, hailing a native New Yorker who's planted a flag on the West Coast, L.A. specifically, and a dear friend of mine. Give it up one time for Nicole Planton. Nicole, how you doing?
I'm good. I love that intro.
Yeah? All right, good. I'm glad.
Big wig. I love that.
I'm glad you like big wig. I was going to go Titan of Industry, but I felt like that's a little cliche. Big wig sound fun. Yeah, big wig.
I need to add that to my bio.
Yeah, throw that up there. That's what's up. How you feeling? How's it going out there on the West Coast?
I'm good. Everything is good. You know, just LA actually having a summer. It took us a minute to get here. June was we had June gloom. So now I'm kind of, it was, so every day you woke up and it was overcast.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like it makes you appreciate, you know, getting up and just seeing, and it just being sunny, you know, like makes you appreciate it that much more. So yeah, I mean, you know, just summertime in LA, trying to be outside, appreciate, you know, that I'm 20 minutes from the beach and that I can, you know, just to be in the outdoors. So
nice. I just heard about June gloom. I never knew about that until this year. Somebody told me about that. I didn't even know that was a thing.
So, I mean, it's funny because I feel like you don't remember it, or you don't, I mean, it's like June comes obviously and you know, like you consecutive days where you're like, damn, where's the sun? Like you wake up every day and it's overcast and it just keeps happening. And then you're like, oh, is this June gloom? You know, I just kind of feel like it's the same pattern every year.
Mm-hmm.
But this year was just really bad. It was literally every single day for the entire, and it probably started even before June. So it was like serious.
Okay.
It was odd. It was odd for us out here. You know, we're so spoiled with having it just be bright and sunny, literally, you know, for the most part, right. 88% of the time, you know. So, yeah.
It's interesting. I wonder what it is about June that starts it. What is it that creates the gloom out there? Is it, do you know, or?
I don't know. I need to research.
All right. Well, somebody.
I'm sure it's a Google away that I haven't bothered doing.
Yeah. So. Somebody hit us. It's obviously because of this. That's what
I know. Somebody who took the time. I'm over here talking about June gloom, and I don't even really know what causes it, but.
It's a thing. It's a thing. It's valid. It's real. This shit is. Oh, man. How was your weekend? Yeah.
It was good, you know, kind of low key. You know, I feel like LA, you know, I mean, LA is a place where you have to seek out things to do. And there are definitely, you know, things to get into here and there. I think for me, I try to use the weekend to try to like find inspiration.
Mm-hmm.
I try to use the weekend to get into just things that I'm like personally interested in, just so I can like find some inspiration and be around like just interesting, inspiring people. Because what I realized is that in LA, you have to seek that out. You have to go out of your way to find those things. It's not like New York where you can like walk outside and, you know, just like see people and see all kinds of people and walk by things. It's just a very different life out here.
Mm-hmm.
You if you don't go out of your way, you might not be exposed to anything or anyone for like days. So basically what I did was I went to this, well, my sister who recently moved out here, Jasmine, who you obviously know, she wanted to go to this like really big book fair, LA Book Fair, I think it was called. And it was sponsored by this company called Printed Matter, New York-based company that I guess they like print books and zines. And I guess they're known in like the publishing world or something because they print books. And so it was at the MoCA Geffen Museum, MoCA Contemporary Museum. And it was interesting. I mean, it's basically a bunch of books, different bookstores set up shop. It's a big fair, so you have like vendors almost, and it's huge open space, and it's just like lines of tables of different setups of different bookstores, and like you have a range of some bookstores that are like really niche and like into like, or maybe like just into these very like obscure things, or you have like old books, and then you have like some that are like art galleries, you know, they'll have their setup. So it's like a range. It was okay. It was, I don't know what the deal was, but it was like the air was not circulating in there. So it was really hot. So I actually like kind of just grazed it. I really didn't get into it because I was like not enjoying myself. Yeah, it was like kind of giving COVID in there. It was like real, stuffy, very stuffy.
Yeah, I'm looking at a photo of it. It definitely has a little stuffy kind of vibe to it, you know.
So I mean, that was like, you know, Jasmine, she seemed to have more tolerance than I did. So she you know, stuck it out. I actually ended up going across the street because it's right next to Little Tokyo. So I went to the Sanrio store to go like check out Hello Kitty stuff because I love Hello Kitty. So that was my Saturday. It was pretty chill. And then Sunday I just did work. Very low key. Yeah.
That's what sounds cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
all right. Sounds cool. Sounds fun. I'm looking at this. Yeah, it looks interesting. It looked like they could have had a couple more windows in this, what it seems like.
Don't know what was going on. Yeah. I mean, it's a huge open space, several rooms, but I was like, as soon as I walked in, I was like, oh, maybe they don't want people to linger. So they're like, you know, they want people to like move through. I don't know. It was strange. I mean, it was kind of not, it wasn't enjoyable. So it was a little bit of a flop.
Damn.
But
oh, wow. There it is.
For
there
me, it was.
That's cool. Yeah. How was the Hello Kitty store?
I mean, I don't know. I've gotten into, I've always loved Hello Kitty, but I've like recently, for some reason, I don't know. It's like I've gotten back into it more. I don't know why or what that's about, but. So it like occurred to me, I was like, oh, we're right across the street from the store, and you know, there's a line outside, and it wasn't crazy though. I actually got in at like just the right time.
Okay.
As I was about to go in, I saw behind me that the line had gotten much longer. And you know, I just got like one thing because there's like a line between like, you know, kind of being an older person who's into like really cute things, like between like looking a little weird, so yeah, I just got like a little, like one of those like little things that you attach to your phone to hold it.
Okay.
It's like, you know, subtle. Yeah. Subtle cute. You know what I mean? So yeah.
So is it like a pop-up store or is it just always a line outside like that
store? Well, you know what? They manage the traffic.
Okay.
So they're like, they let a few people in at a time. So I guess it just doesn't get too crowded.
Okay.
Because I guess they do get, you know, they have, I guess, a lot of people go to the store. So, uh-huh. Yeah, they're just managing the traffic.
Okay. So it's kind of like Supreme in that way, where there's just a bunch of people outside waiting to get in.
Yeah,
I've seen that. I've seen a lot of Hello Kitty love over the years, you know, peripherally, but I've seen it. And it's interesting. Has there ever been a Hello Kitty movie?
You know what? I was thinking about that because, you know, obviously Barbie just came out.
Right.
And I was like, huh, I wonder if they would ever consider that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think, I don't know. Like, Hello Kitty's been around forever. I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
I first got into it as a child, mm-hmm. as a kid, and I had like all the little Hello Kitty accessories and whatnot. And I don't know actually when like Hello Kitty first like was first born. I don't know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I just, yeah, I wonder if it's ever, I mean, if you think about it, I think with Barbie, people were kind of like, wow, I can't believe it took so long.
Right.
So I don't know. I mean, I don't know if it's ever been considered. I know that they're really particular about the brand.
Right.
It's like sick. Like Barbie has a whole, I mean, not Barbie, Hello Kitty has like a whole personality.
Mm.
Like there, it'll be like, what is Hello Kitty's favorite color? Or what's Hello Kitty's favorite thing to eat? Like,
oh wow,
you
okay.
know, yeah.
And if you like, know, you know, you got, if you like a real one, you know the deal. Is it that type of, okay.
I guess so. Yeah. I mean, I yeah, they've really put a lot of thought into the brand. So
uh-huh.
I feel like it would be interesting if they decided to do like a movie, but I don't know.
Yeah, that's interesting. So Hello Kitty is one kitty. It's not like a universe. It's, there's one kitty that's Hello Kitty. That's the one person, just similar like to Barbie, or is it like a bunch of...
It's like part of like a little universe because there's like a few other characters, but I just like when you go into the Sanrio store, there's a variety of different characters and they're all part of the same world. So you can actually choose. Hello Kitty is just one of uh-huh. a few of the characters.
Okay.
But clearly the most popular one.
Okay.
And I honestly like don't even pay attention to the ones. I don't even know the other one, the names of the other ones.
Okay.
I know them when I see them, but.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's what's up. That's what it is.
Yeah.
So the Hello Kitty store. So you did you find any inspiration in the Hello Kitty store?
I can't really say I did, but you know, it brings the inner child out of you.
Got it. Yeah. Yeah. No, I hear you. I hear you.
It's just fun. You know, shameless fun.
Mm-hmm. Nah, that's what's up. I've been on a chase for inspiration for a little while too. So I feel you on that. Just kind of seeking it out, you know.
Yeah.
Trying to catch something to kickstart some motivation or inspiration or, you know, some creativity to get it going. So yeah, I could feel that. I've been seeing, you know, it's interesting. I didn't really do a whole lot this weekend. Friday, you know, that was an interesting thing. Friday was it was a weird day for me because you know, hip hop turned 50, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if you heard this because I mean, it's really hard to get this in. Okay, okay.
I mean, where I would have to be under a rock.
I mean, everybody, even Kathy Hochul and Chuck Schumer are talking about
right.
how, you know, it's a lot. It's a lot. Right. I was like, all right, I can't wait till hip hop's 51 so we can, you know.
But, I know, I felt overwhelmed. I definitely felt overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm. It's dope though. I'm happy. I'm happy for it. It's also So that same day is actually my grandmother's birthday. She passed a couple years ago, so she'd have been 98. So there's that. You know, they, you know, hip hop got the same birthday as my grandmother. So it was a little bit of me thinking about that, and then thinking about, you know, the hip hop 50. So that Friday, I kind of was chilling. I did watch the hip hop 50 concert. On the stream, which is, I'm gonna be honest with you, I don't wanna say I'm at that age because there's people out there that are really out there, but I appreciate a good stream of a concert that I could enjoy at my crib, on the couch with a nice drink and just chilling. Yeah,
I'm with you,
especially if said concert's gonna be 8 hours because the concert was about 8 hours. That's a lot, that's a work shift. So we'll talk about that. I did that on Friday. Saturday I had some shows, and then Sunday I went out to the island to see my sister. We caught up. We watched The Chi. That's kind of one of our things when The Chi is back.
Okay.
Yeah. So we watched The Chi. The Chi is back, and it's a good show. I like The Chi. I don't think you don't watch The Chi, right? I don't think you.
No. Wait. So you're saying it's back? Like what? There's a new season?
It's a new season. I want to say season 6.
Really?
Season 6. It's been 6 seasons of The Chi. This is the Duda season for the cast that watched The Chi. Duda is like the kind of the gangster that is. He seems to run this whole little city. Damn near at least 80% of the city is on his payroll, and he's a wild dude. He's a good character, but he's a crazy motherfucker. Just some of the shit that he does is just he's super unstable, but like controlled chaos. He knows what he does. He knows the reaction he gets. You know, I mean, this is six seasons. Look, this man is a killer. So there's a moment where he kills for like some of the most. Like just trivial reasons, super trivial reasons. You know how people, I hear people say there's this the term now that's like, what's your ick? You know, like these little things, like whatever, what's a little pet peeve of yours? So he kills a man. I mean, he puts a few in this one dude just off of a ick. Like, damn, Pop, you ain't really had to do
like
that.
A wild card.
He's a super wild card. And then he knows how it shakes people, so he'll put in work, put about 6 in somebody, walk over, say, hey, do me a favor, you pass me my coat, listen, I'm about to get out of here, you want to grab some cigars? Like, it's as if the shit didn't happen, you know. So that's that's what makes him such a compelling character. There's some, and then, you know, there's a whole ecosystem of what goes on in The shop but this feels like, from the first 2 episodes I saw, this feels like this is due to season, like we're gonna really see he's the villain.
Are we talking, we're talking Lena Waithe's show?
Yeah, we're talking Lena Waithe's show.
So there's a new, I don't know why I was under the impression that it was done. Like, you know, that I didn't know that they were going to continue, like that they were still, I didn't know they were still shooting or that there were going to be any more seasons. I mean, was there like a break at all?
Yeah, well, there's a couple things that happened. It was at one point a few years ago. What's my man's name? Jason. Damn, what's my man's name? He played Eazy-E in the Straight Outta Compton movie. Hold on, I'm gonna look him up. Eazy-E, Straight Outta Compton movie. I think his name was Jason Mitchell, right? Okay. He had there was like a bit of a scandal. Kind of sexual harassment scandal. Him and I want to say the other woman's name was Tiffany Boone, one of the characters. Both are no longer on the show. But like Jason was kind of one of the lead characters of the show. So when this kind of started to kind of come out, it was like, shit, it might go left. You know, this might not come back. There was a lot of controversy surrounding it. It rebounded and it kind of focused on like the younger kids, and the younger kids started getting bigger and other characters started to develop. So there's that. Beyond that, they had a season that came out during COVID, because I guess they wrapped before COVID really, you know, took form or really started to, you know, shut things down. So they had that, which was kind of sustaining them. And this past season, this is it. From what I understand, I think they're splitting the season in half, whereas I think it's 16 episodes this season, allegedly. I think they're splitting it 8 and 8, something like that. There might be a little hiatus, but beyond that, it's been rocking. It's been rocking, yeah.
I mean, I've always heard really good things about the show, but my issue is that if I don't start, I just don't know, when I would have the time to catch up at this point, this far into it, 6 seasons in. I mean, when would I ever have the free time? I mean, the only time I could see myself catching up would be like on a long flight to like Asia or something, you know, what I mean? A situation where all you can do is sit there and can't do anything else with your time. So I don't know. I just feel like it's too late for me and that show.
I get it. Sometimes, yeah, sometimes these they get too far away. Six seasons is intimidating. That's a lot. That's a lot. Yeah. To, you know what I mean? Especially when you feel like, especially if you have the desire to catch up with the people so you could watch the last season or whatever the current season is with the people, that's too much pressure. So it's one of those things that if you check it out and you find yourself digging it, then, you know, you might want to watch it at your leisure. I think it's good. I think it's good. I definitely like it a lot. You know, it's one of those.
I always hear good things about it.
Yeah.
So I wish I had started watching it when it first came out and was, you know, up to speed.
Sometimes you just gotta let shit go past. You know, there's quite a few shows I never got on board with.
And
I don't know if there's gonna be another pandemic, because that's the only reason I got up on Game of Thrones. You know what I mean? If there's another pandemic, maybe, you know, that'd be the good time to catch up. But I will be, you know what though? Honestly though, I'm not sure how long this strike is gonna last, but I do feel like in the fall, we're really gonna see the effect of this strike. With a lot of scripted programming not coming back, a lot of actors not, you know, hitting the set. So that's going to be a time to where a lot of shows maybe you missed out on, you kind of dip back, and then that'll be what sustains you, you know, throughout the strike situation.
Right. Well, that might be, I think the first on my list would be Snowfall. I regret that I never jumped into that I heard such good things. I'm a little annoyed that I feel like I do have a sense of how it ends, but it sounds like it was really good. So we'll see.
That's definitely one to check. I think that's only, what is that, 4 or 5 seasons, something like that. It's not terrible. It's not terrible. So yeah, that was my weekend. I just did that. Kicked it a little bit.
So you have more, you'll do more than one show in a day? You said you had shows on Saturday.
Oh, yeah. I had 2 shows that day. Yeah, it depends. Okay. You could do quite a few, because there's sets. Like in the city, you're doing like 15, 20-minute sets. So you could do upwards to 4 or 5, you know, if you want to get compulsive about it. But typically, I max out around 3, you know, because after a while, and I feel like, you might not even, it becomes not autopilot, but you could kind of start to feel a little fatigue. It may not be, or I could feel a little fatigue, may not be as present. You get a little tired or whatever. But like 2 or 3 in a night is good, because then I could start working on, I could try something new on the first set and see how it went, adjust the second set, adjust it again the third set, that type of thing. So that's a good way to kind of, you know, trial and error on new material and switch things around, do a lot of tweaking and, you know, get some stuff going. So, yeah.
What are some hot topics lately?
Hot topics?
That you've been including in your...
That I've been including?
Yeah.
I don't know about hot topics. That's interesting.
I mean, because there's just so much... I mean, obviously, there's always a lot going on, but, you know, just like, what are some...
It's really... Honestly, it's really stuff... Based on me, I'm trying to think, what have I been talking about? Nothing crazy like that's not beyond me. As far as new shit, just silly, like topical shit, I definitely touched on this whole, you know, the hip hop 50 thing. I had a little fun with the Fade in the Water, the Montgomery Brawl.
Oh, yes, of course.
Just, you know what I mean? Just to have fun with that up top. But for the most part, just regular shit, my life. Nothing too crazy. It's just my shit. Okay. You got it. The people got to come out. You know what I mean? Come out, see the kid. But yeah. It's been good. I can't complain. Been having fun.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, you know, LA's waiting.
I know. I'm about to get out there sooner than later. Sooner than later. We'll see. Yeah, I know. I know.
We're ready for a set.
I'm coming out there soon. So you'll know. You'll be the first to know.
All right.
Anyway. So, Hip Hop 50. Did you watch this? Did you see any of the concert?
I did. I watched it in snippets here and there.
Okay.
Because obviously, like you said, it was super long.
Uh-huh.
So, I was catching... little clips online, and then I was like, all right, let me sit down and like give this a more focused watch. So I didn't watch it straight through, but I saw a few of the performances. And first of all, I almost considered going out to New York for the show because it's a big moment, Hip Hop 50, Yankee Stadium. I was like, okay, this is gonna be, I think sometimes you, or I, especially working in music, sometimes you take certain moments, you take certain things for granted. And but I've been telling myself that I have to do better, that there's certain moments that are just like, there's certain things that happen in our, I mean, there's just certain moments that are historical or like big cultural moments. You know, it's not another show. So all that to say, I thought about it. I was like, oh, because actually just seeing the Mass Appeal folks, some of who I know, I'm going to shout out Jenya Meggs. I don't know if you know Jenya, but she works at Mass Appeal. So she was involved. I saw her like start to, I saw that she was involved in planning this. So I kind of saw it start to come together a little bit, like just her talking about, okay, like posting about going to Yankee Stadium. And yeah, just I saw the like kind of the early stages of it coming together, just like, you know, via her social media. So I was kind of like, oh, should I go out there? But I did not. But it I think they did a really good job. I think they really represented all the they had all the fathers there, you know, Grandmaster Flash and yeah, all the originators, they were there. So I think it was great that they got them all out. Grandmaster Flash, MC Shan,
Cool Herc.
Kool Herc, all of them. I mean, and some people you realize you're like, wow, I have not late, I don't even, I haven't seen this person in, you know, like decades, like EPMD, for instance. I don't feel like we've seen them in years. They're not really like outside, you know? They don't really pop up here and there. So that was interesting. Who else? Wu-Tang is always amazing. I think it was great to see Nas like really lead the charge on this. I thought that was really dope that he and his company were central to making this happen. And yeah, I thought that was really dope to see. And seeing him bring Lauren out. I love that record, by the way, that they have together, the Nobody record.
Yeah, she
by
got
Lovesay
busy on that.
performed. Yeah, love that. And I think one thing I've just really been loving is seeing how much people, well, there's a couple things. I love seeing the hip hop, like that generation, or I just love seeing health emphasized, like how healthy people look like they are really taking care of themselves. They look, you know, like they're in good shape. They're moving well. You know, they're like able to move around. They're not out of breath. Like it was just really nice to see that people look like they're really taking care of themselves. So I love seeing that. And I think also there was another thought I had, but I'm just losing my train of thought. I like seeing that. I can't remember. It'll come back to
It'll come
me.
back. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nah, I agree with you. I think Mass Appeal has been for a while. Like they're good custodians to the hip hop culture. With Sasha Jenkins, they did the Wu-Tang documentary that was really good. They did the Video Music Box documentary, just them partnering with Nas, that's, I mean, come on, that's one of the more iconic rappers of hip hop right. history. You know what I'm saying? So like, just the way that they do it, there's a lot of care to it. They really pay close attention. It doesn't feel like it's just a money grab, you know?
Right.
Like that's, right. I appreciate that, particularly with mass appeal. So I'm happy that they were like, you know, like leading the charge and responsible for that hip hop 50 at Yankee Stadium. That was kind of the one thing that was, you know, I've been saying for weeks. That's one of the things that kind of had me a little bit skeptical about this whole hip hop 50. It's just so many people see it like as a line item in the budget. They're like, oh wow, yeah. we could make some money off of this hip hop 50. Okay, uh-huh. let's figure how we could leverage this. Uh-huh. And I don't feel like it's a lot of that. Or when it, you know, I think that, you know, in the 50 years, especially as rappers particularly, but just the culture in itself has been really sophisticated and really like, I think, diligent at sussing out kind of the real opportunistic type of people. It can kind of get sorted out faster than need be. Like it's self-cleaning like an oven on a certain level.
Yeah. But,
I fucked with it. I thought the concert was dope. I appreciated it. Well, I appreciated a lot of things. One, to your point, you know, like seeing groups like EPMD and, you know, seeing Shan and seeing, you know, just, you know, the legend, the, you know, the history of hip hop. So many from the beginning. You know, so many people from the beginning, Kool Herc, I think Cindy, what's her name? His sister, his cousin. I don't want to say Cindy Adams because that's, yeah.
Person whose party it was.
Yeah, whose party it was.
It's crazy. That set everything off.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I'll find out. Cindy Campbell. Yeah, just to see them get their shine, you know.
Yeah.
To see the Bronx get a shine, to be totally honest with you,
yeah.
for being in Yankee Stadium, you know, everybody says, you know, hip hop started in the Bronx. So that's a fact. But I do feel like there's, you know, outside of these last maybe five to 10 years, I think the Bronx has had a bit of a resurgence with mm-hmm. a lot more people kind of hitting the mainstream, whether that's Cardi B, whether that's Fat Joe on Instagram
Ice
Live,
Spice.
You know, Ice Spice, Desus and Mero. Like, there's a lot of people that have been coming out of the Bronx, you know, like, even that, you know what I mean? Like, that are kind of bringing it back a little bit. Because if I'm thinking about it, a lot of hip-hop superstars, I don't know if there was a pie chart, but I feel like Queens and Brooklyn have a lot of hip hop superstars, you know, as compared to the other five boroughs. So like just to see people like Fat Joe and KRS-One on stage at Yankee Stadium doing the Bridges Over was crazy. You know,
yeah.
that was a moment. Seeing like, I also peeped that there's certain, it's that you got to see what artists were comfortable with rocking a stadium. Like that's a stadium, you know,
right.
And some people surprised me. Like when I seen Remy Ma do her set where she came out dolo and rocked that shit by herself. Yeah. I thought that was fire. You know, you talked about the Nas set. Nas was crazy, you know, bringing out Lorman, bringing out Kool G Rap, who's like, he barely comes out. And
oh, that was a moment.
That shit was fire. Yeah,
that record was my record.
Fast Life?
Day.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, that was,
yes,
that was all that.
That was a moment, and it sounded good in there.
Yeah, yeah. Now, he did his thing. He did his thing. Lauren came out looking official. I like her little style, how she had the...
Oh, her style is
it's crazy.
Everything.
It was crazy.
She has the best style, period. Like, hands down. She's almost like the female Pharrell.
Mm.
Like, in the sense of she just exudes it. Like, she never misses, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, and it's just so authentic, and it's so her.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, it's never feels like, oh, these are the trends. It never feels like it. Yeah, it's just she might show up once every like 2-3 years, but she always shows up with her own style that feels like it's authentically her, right, expressing herself. It didn't come from, you know, whatever anybody else is doing. And I mean, yeah, I love that. Like, this look was so fire. And it was actually done by Bria Stinson.
Oh, you know, shit. Stinson? Of course. Yes. Shout out CAU.
Yeah. Yeah, she designed a custom piece for that custom look for Lauren, and also designed Nas's look.
Okay.
So she designed those looks, and then April Rumet styled them.
Okay. All right. Bad. Yeah. Yeah. Shout out to Bria.
To Bria. In Detroit. It.
Yeah. 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 That's fire. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
I got a theory with Lauren, though. This is, you know.
Okay. Talk to me.
I fuck with Lauren. That's one of my favorite rappers of all time, right? Even though she hasn't done a studio album since 98, right? Still a beast. Came through with that verse on Nas's album. Shit was crazy. Out the blue, destroyed it. It kind of spoke to why you don't really hear from her, right?
Right.
And there's a thing, I'd been hearing about it, but I seen it on this Yankee Stadium show. Like, she kind of speeds through her records. You know, like, her records have a whole new tempo. Them shits is, BPMs is, they amped up.
Yeah.
And there's a thing where I think everybody loved Lauren. I'm not saying that Lauren don't love the game, but it feels like content might be a strong word, but it don't feel like, I don't want to say she don't love it, because that's a weird accusation, but it just feels like maybe she could take it or leave it. You know what I mean? I'll come through because she fucks with Nas heavy. Like, she, right, you know, for her to even jump on the record with Nas, that says a lot. You know, I've heard Nas talk about conversations that they have, and they've also included Andre 3000. And one of the things that they've said was, you know, they want to make rap after 50 or post 40 still be fly, still be relevant. And that, you know, that speaks to, out of the three of them, you could see that with Nas's output has been heightened, him and Hit-Boy locking and going crazy. And Nas is just being probably as relevant as he's ever been, you know.
Yeah, this last album, I thought he really did his thing on this last album.
The Magic 2?
Yeah, Magic 2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So out the three of them, he's probably the most prolific, you know. Andre 3000 and peek his head out every, you know what I mean, every other quarter, you know what I'm saying, or every year and a half or whatever. Lauren will come out every so often, and it's like, I don't know. It's just a weird energy. It's like, she here, she gonna do it, but car's waiting outside. I'm out of here. Y'all see me for a bit. I'm jet, and it don't really feel like there's any like super desire to truly be all the way back in the game. And my last point on that it's my last point just on that, because I was listening to the Unplugged album, right? And I remember when that first came out, there was a lot of people that kind of dismissed it or felt like, yo, she's bugging out on this album. She's, you know, she's talking wild. You know, like, that. It was a lot of people felt like she kind of came undone on that album. When I go back and listen to it, especially somebody that performs, but I was listening to like a lot of the little, I don't say rants, but the like transitional moments between songs where she's talking about what's going on in her life and how she's viewing the industry and her career and art and being someone that wants to be fully themselves. It's deep as fuck. Like, some of the shit that she was talking about was super, like, it answers a whole lot of questions.
Yeah.
But I'm just curious, what is your thoughts on Lauren? What you think?
I mean, I definitely agree with that energy. I think I would liken it to when someone goes home for the holidays. Mm. Like, when you go home to a family get together.
Yeah.
You know, on for Thanksgiving, right? And it's like, okay, this is my family, and I'm going to go because I there's love. There's love there.
Right.
Right. That's what I should do. But don't bring this up. Don't bring that up.
Mm.
I don't know if I'm going to, are we going to acknowledge that this is what's happening over here with this person? You know, so like, what are we going to acknowledge? How are we going to interact with each other? You know, there's like these underlying things going on, these underlying dynamics. And I feel like that's the energy. She's like, yeah, I'm going to show for hip hop, but I don't know if I love, but I have my issues. I take issue mm-hmm. with a lot of aspects of hip hop, mainly the industry of hip hop.
Right.
Which I think that's where there's been some disappointment and pain. I think that she's a true artist, and I think she came into the business to do her art. And I think it's really difficult and disappointing to people when they realize that there's this whole, or you realize the magnitude of the machine.
Right.
And you realize how somewhat cold it is and how heartless it is. And I think that can be really jarring, you know. It's like, mm-hmm. I've always felt that she just was really put off. You know, she got to the height, she reached this incredible height. She won multiple Grammys. I mean, she was on every magazine cover. And mind you, this was really, if we think back, and they brought this up in, did they bring this up in the Ladies of Hip Hop? I think they did, the on Netflix.
Ladies First.
As a dark-skinned woman.
Right, yeah, they talked about it. Mm-hmm.
Was the face of beauty.
Right.
Which, you know, I mean, she was just everything and everywhere. Like, she could do no wrong. And I think it got to the point where it felt unnatural, and it does get to a point where it's not going to feel natural. And then you're going to transition into this place of I know there's the person I am, and who do I need to be for all of this? Mm-hmm. And I think that's where a lot of artists struggle, is towing that line of being who you are and continuing to be your authentic self, but also then becoming aware of this audience, you know? And I think I just always felt that she was just too real of a person to do any of the things that the industry would have called on her to do, you know, in terms of maybe watering some things down or, you know, just conforming to certain things, you know, agreeing, you know, just kind of doing, I think, and I don't think she felt protected because mm-hmm. she had the relationship that she, you know, the things that were going on with her and, you know, Wyclef, not to get into their business. And mind you, I don't really know all the details of their business, but I don't know if she felt protected either. So I think that was probably also difficult for her, because I think about like the height that she reached, and then you think about people like, say, Beyonce, for instance. Mm-hmm. And I think Beyonce is so, she's wrapped in, like, she's protected. She has this very tight knit circle around her of mm-hmm. people that she knows, you know, that she knows are on her side and support her. And I think that ends up making the difference. And then, mind you, yeah, Lauren was in hip hop, which is a different area of the industry that's really difficult for women.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
she did surpass it. You know, she kind of like transcended it, I should say. She transcended it. But I still think that she was rooted in, you know, rooted what she did and why she was here was still rooted in hip hop. So I think that's who really who she was. She was a child of hip hop. And I think that there was friction, you know, in terms of like what she felt she represented and what the industry wanted from her.
Yeah, now that's real. That's deep. I really like that home for the holidays analogy, because that definitely hits the nail on the head. I also think that when I think about back then, I used to always have this feeling back then to the, you know, to the point of, I remember in that, the Ladies First documentary, and just even back then, like, you know, who she was and what she represented and who she represented for, it, like, I could just imagine that shit probably was overwhelming beyond all of the demands of what the industry was, but it was so many people looking to her as kind of like somebody that's superhuman damn near, you know, mm-hmm. like...
Put her on a pedestal.
Put her on a super pedestal to where she couldn't even be a human being. Like, she kind of had to be infallible. You know what I mean? Like, and when things were, when there were, you know, I don't say cracks, but there was, like, real life shit going on that didn't fit the perception that people bestowed on her, it was deeply critical, you know? So I could think that has something to do with it, too. But it just felt like... I remember in the moment, I'm like, damn, they really, like, they putting a lot on her. Okay, she's killing it, but, like, she's still a person. She's still, you know, right. But it was just like, Lauren is here to save us. You know what I'm right. saying? Lauren is this, Lauren is that. And I'm sure that shit could have been heavier than a motherfucker. But, yeah.
I mean, and it's also interesting with her when she, well, going back to talking about some of the performances, she also does this thing where she interacts with the band and the
DJ. Or...
I feel like she's sort of managing what the band's doing while she's on stage a lot, which I think it, you can just kind of sense it that there's, and I mean, I've from what I hear, she is very, you know, particular and really wants to have a certain amount of control over what the band is doing. And, you know, which I think can be a little bit challenging because when you have an MD, there is has to be a certain level of like trust for the MD, which is the musical director for people who might not know what MD means. So there has to be a certain amount of like mutual trust, you know, and I think and then, yeah, it looked a little bit like the backup dancer. I mean, singers, they looked a little like they were on edge. I mean, I don't know if that was...
Got a little James Brown energy to her.
I thought they looked a little like they were like watching to see, okay, you know, watching her for direction. So I don't know if I was just seeing things and I don't want to like, you know...
Nah, you wasn't seeing things. Stir we're seeing anything, the same shit.
But I don't want to stir up anything.
Say, oh, we saw what we saw. The shit was everybody.
I was like, oh, this is, you know, like you kind of got the sense that that was happening. But the other thing I was going to say to your point about how well people were performing, I always say that the artists who come from that generation had to do so much, had to prove themselves so much to become successful that they really possessed the talent. Like they didn't have the smoke and mirrors. They didn't have the auto tune. They didn't have all the like
pyro.
Extra dazzle, razzle dazzle to sort of, you know, like create this image. They didn't have the filter. They didn't have any of that back then. You had to keep proving yourself literally by just showing up and doing what it is you do. So whether the back in the day that meant cipher or walking into the studio, you don't even have music to play. Nobody can pull up and say, oh, you have, you know, 100,000 followers or you have this many plays on your SoundCloud. Like you didn't have any of that back then. You had to walk. So for, you know, for that to like impact maybe the impression that somebody's going to have on you. Like you had to walk in and just do the damn thing and either be good or bad, you know?
Right.
And so to me, the people from that era before social media, that's why you see these guys from back then, you see Wu-Tang and you'll see, let me see, who else have I seen from that? I mean, Luda and
Kane.
Snoop. Kane, they come out and they kill it. LL, because you had to. There was no like a smoke machine. I mean, yeah, you know what I'm saying. There wasn't like, no, you, so yeah, to me, they always come out and damn near, you know, kill all these like kind of younger artists who usually have to like catch up to their records. You know what I mean? Like records out, now they got to learn how to dance and move and
rapping over the vocals.
You know what I mean? They got to figure that out after the fact. Whereas back then, you had to master all of those things for anyone to take you seriously.
Yeah.
So yeah, I always say like those, the older, I mean, and you know, basically the seasoned artists, but like just from that era, to me, they always come through and like, they never disappoint.
Yeah.
They always crush it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, cause Snoop, I mean, look how effortlessly he was killing it. Effortless.
He was like hosting. You know what I mean? Like it was a whole thing. It was dope. Speaking of that type of stuff, I seen a clip. It wasn't at the Yankee thing. It was, I don't know if it was Lincoln Center, but I seen Kane performing. And just to show like how, you know, how actively these people tweak their shows. Like he's got these little moments where he'll kind of create like a era where you're like, damn, what happened? Like it fucked up, right? So there's one where he dropped the mic and he picked up the mic and, you know, that's been all over. But just recently, he's freestyling. And these are new bars. You know what I'm saying? He's been in the game.
Oh, I haven't seen this.
Yeah, these are new bars. He's freestyling. And then there's a moment where, like, he kind of just stopped. And then he, like, frees up for a minute. It's like a little bit. He was like, what's going on? You know? And then he says, and even when I forget the rhymes, I'm Mitch McConnell lit. I said, oh, shit. This nigga references the Mitch McConnell, you know, free. Yeah, it's just showmanship, you know? Like,
yeah,
you know, that was the thing. Or, you know, just being given a show. That was the thing I always heard amongst a lot of those super like golden era MCs, Kane and you know, certain Kane particularly. I know Dougie Fresh was known to like come up to other rappers and be like, yo, I seen you on stage. This is where you need to tweak that. You need to do this. He'll hit you with some videos. Yo, watch this Prince concert, watch this Barry White concert, see what they do, adopt that, you know, all of this type of thing. And I feel like the premium to a stage show is starting to come back. I think that Lox versus Dipset battle was a turning point. You know, it felt like a lot of, from what I understand, Jada was like a lot of younger cats is starting to hit his phone like, yo, you know, kind of like, you know, wanting the sauce. Like even just the fact of, okay, I could rhyme. I don't need to have a TV track. I could actually just rhyme straight over the instrumental, you know, and get to it. So we'll see.
Artist development matters.
Absolutely. I mean, artist you would know best. Matters. Yeah.
And he gave props to Puff.
Right.
Who never, you know, he made sure all areas were covered with his artists. Right. And he always made sure that the show was tight. And that's the thing about artist development is it's information that you take with you and you have going forward. You know, it's part of your foundation. So that's why the Lox were like, oh, wait, we're performing? Oh, like we're about to get on stage and perform? Oh, well, this is what then has to happen. We're going to need to rehearse this much. And, you know, this is what goes into, you don't get on a stage unless you do this. You know what I mean? So I feel like Cam's show was pretty decent. As I was watching Cameron, I was kind of like, oh, I wonder if after they got beat out, if he stepped it up.
Right. Yeah, something to prove. And it's also Yankee Stadium, too. You don't want to take an L there. Yeah.
Your home.
Right.
Your home.
Right.
In your backyard.
Yeah. That shit was funny. He had his It Is What It Is hat on with paws on the back, which was hilarious.
He's a character.
Yeah, he's definitely a character. And it's funny just to see the way some of these artists have kind of reinvented themselves. Hammond Mace doing that sports show. It's kind of got them a whole nother lane of momentum, you know, to build some more relevance. I think that's kind of fly. I got a question for you.
Yep.
Now, because obviously I've been listening to rap damn near my entire life, as long as I can remember, right? But obviously you've been doing that, but you also have been working in music for 20 plus years, right? And, you know, you kind of talked about it earlier, looking for inspiration, and that might have just been holistically. But I find myself, obviously I don't work in that space anymore, but like I find myself where I'm like, I don't want to be one of these people that's like, I'm definitely not trying to be the old man, get off my lawn type of thing. I try to keep a somewhat of an ear just to hear what's going on, just to kind of be up to speed on what's going on. But I'm quick to say, that's not for me. I'm not going to shit on it. I just know that's not for me. I know I'm not the target anymore. Right. Yeah. So I'm cool. I noticed that I was watching the lady's first documentary, and it was the moment where Tierra Whack got out on the block and started spitting. And it just made me think, like, I remember being outside when that would be a thing. People like, nigga, hold on, let me spit for you. I'm about to spit some shit. And you'd be excited. All right, let me see if you got ball. You know what I mean? Like, you excited about the shit. Now, you've been working in music for 20 plus years. You work in A&R. You're dealing with new talent, finding the new talent. I would imagine, and I would imagine that's gotta be, you know, that's a lot of listening. It's a lot of listening. It's a lot of, you know, you sifting for gold, and it could be a lot of fool's gold and dog shit out there. One thing I'm curious, two things. One, how do you stay inspired? And then two, do you have a musical palate cleanser? Like, if you have to listen to a bunch of beats or a bunch of artists and you're looking for a sound, or you're looking for the next artist or something that's going to, you know, like, really inspire you or strike a nerve, or like, this is it. On the way there, you got to listen to a whole lot of shit. Is there anything that you listen to like, reset your palate? I don't know if that's ever been something you thought about, but I'm just curious.
Okay, wait, what was the first question?
So the first question was, how do you stay inspired? You
know. Oh, okay. How do I stay inspired? You know, fortunately, I still feel, I still get excited when I see or hear something interesting, or like, I'm curious, right? Like, I think that's one of the things I lead with is my curiosity, right? So I still will come across things, whether it's social media or, you know, just in my surroundings, that I will feel drawn to, or I will be drawn to, just because I'm like, oh, this looks interesting. This looks different. What is this? And it just makes me feel like I want to delve in some more. I want to lean in, like, okay, let me see what this is about. Where is this coming from? So I am fortunate because it's almost like a meter. Like, sometimes I'm like, yeah, you feel like, am I still capable of reacting, or is what's going on now still able to, like, stimulate my excitement or senses? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like, so I do one, you know, I do sometimes think like, oh, what if I just am listening and I literally have no reaction and just could care less and I'm totally indifferent? Like, that day could come, you know? You know what I mean?
Right.
But fortunately, it's not, I still care about why people like something. So even though I might hear a song that's popular, or I might just hear something, right? And I'm kind of like, I might My initial reaction might be, like, for instance, our girl Sexy Red.
Pound Town.
Yeah. Like, I'm like, what is this girl even talking about? Like, are we really all singing along with these lyrics? But it's the melody. She could have been saying anything. It's the melody that's sticking to us. She happens to be saying some crazy shit, but it's the melody that we all that it just draws you in, that makes you want to sing with her because of the way she's saying it. So I think I'm always still curious about what it is that's working. What it is that people are responding to. So I think fortunately that's just how my brain works, is that I still want to understand the, like, it might not, I might not be the audience. I might not be the, yeah, I might not be the core audience, but I still want to understand why people are responding to something. And so I'm still gonna listen with that ear. And I'm gonna what's the word? Not extract, but like, I'm going to identify what those elements are. I'm gonna be like, oh, it's definitely this harmony, or it's this repetition, or it's the fact that she's talking about something that's relatable to people. You know, I'm still gonna like point out what those elements are, that the elements that are like, that people are drawn to, the elements that cause whatever it is to stick. So I think, you know, and I'm just like glad, because honestly, yeah, there's just so much stuff out there. There are definitely times where I'm like, I don't want to listen to this. I'm turning this off. Like, I just can't. Like, my brain cells are dissolving as I listen to this. You know what I mean? So I definitely have those moments, but then I'm always like, oh, yeah, there's some things where I just have no desire, that I have no desire to listen to. But then there's other things where I'm still just like, okay, this is some crass shit. Like, this girl just said pussy like 20 times in like the last 10 seconds. You know what I mean? But I'm like, but it's her angle. You know, some of these girls might be like, you know, she's probably saying something that people, I mean, she's saying something that's relatable to certain people. It's just, yeah, she might be using certain vocabulary, but girls are like, yep, exactly. You know what I mean? So yeah, I mean, it's not really that difficult. I'm not even gonna lie. And I'm just grateful that I'm still like curious. I'm still looking at some of these new kids, and I'm still clicking on I see an image that jumps out at me, and I'm like, oh, what is this? This is interesting. And I still wanna know more. And then I still wanna hear the music, and I still wanna understand it and get it. You know what I mean? So, I don't know if that's answering your
No,
question.
that answers the question. That's for real. And speaking of Sexy Red Pound Town, I ain't gonna lie, that shit is catchy. This that I couldn't stop for a while. That one line, come suck a bitch toes. I don't know, that shit is just hilarious to me. It make me laugh.
Yeah.
And I've heard
You're
her
like,
ring.
I can't believe I'm singing these lyrics, but it's the way she says it. You can't help
Yeah,
it.
nah, shit is it's funny. It's some funny shit. She got a
Right.
lot of humor behind it. Even and I've seen her in a lot of interviews, because that's how I kind of come to a lot of new artists nowadays, is I'll catch them in an interview prior to maybe even really getting into their music. But I seen how enterprising she was with, like, she was selling all types of wild lip glosses with crazy, like, names and flavors, gonorrhea green, you know what I mean?
Oh,
Like, off the chain, wild shit.
stop. I didn't
Yeah.
even know all of
Oh
this
yeah,
about
nah,
her.
she's wild. She's funny too, so I could
Okay.
dig it.
I
I
can
could dig
stop.
it. But now let me ask you this. So back to the,
Palate cleanser?
is that something that you may do? It may not even be something explicit or deliberate, but
Don't
I'm just curious.
necessarily need it. I listen to so many different, like, I listen to a lot of types of music. I listen to music from different eras. So I never feel like overwhelmed, because I switch around a lot, and I listen the best time, I try to make listening to music not feel like work. I mean, yes, it will feel like work when you're like, oh, I need to get back to this person. I need to give them some feedback on these records that they sent me, or I need to like get back to with notes. And yeah, there's no getting around that, but I try to listen. The best way to listen to music is in the car, because in a way it's like it's passive. So the things that need to, like, everything just the things that might need to be addressed, in the song, in the music, you know, the tweaking, maybe something that's going on with just anything. You, for some reason, it just jumps out when you're driving, when you're not trying so hard, when you're sitting at your desk listening. I mean, you'll notice too, don't get me wrong, but for some reason, when you're driving, it's like it just jumps out, like just certain observations or things you'll notice about the song, or like ideas that you might that might come to mind about, oh, maybe we should do this instead. You know what I mean? So, or maybe this person, maybe if it's not a song that's like in progress, if it's somebody else's music and I'm just, you know, need to get feedback, or it's like artists that are already out. Yeah, I don't know. I listen to a lot of music and I don't really feel like I need a palate cleanser, to be honest. I think because I listen to music on my own that is just doesn't sound like anything that maybe I'm getting from artists. So it just kind of like breaks it up for me.
Got it.
Yeah.
That's what's up.
yeah.
Oh man. I got a question. Did you see this is we're going a different direction. Did you see the this did you see Cree Summer's house? Did you see this video
You
where
know, I
no?
know that I saw like a small snippet because I follow her and I think
Okay.
she posted it, and I was kind of like, oh, I'm surprised she posted this, because I just saw little some por a portion of like the clip where the person who was, I guess, taking the tour of the house was asking her how much several things were.
That's what I really want to talk about. Like the Cree Summers house is it's one thing. It's very Cree Summers. The shit is like a pirate ship. Like I, you know what I mean? And it's on brand. It's you know what I mean? I'm not
Off brand.
surprised. It's very, you know, it's this, that's that. It makes perfect sense. But the cat, Caleb Simpson, I've been seeing him pop up on online for a while, you know, particularly a lot of in New York. This my I think that was the first time I've ever seen him out on the West Coast. But he just, you know, it's this thing. He'll run up on people in the street. Yo, how much do you pay for rent? You know what I
Oh,
mean?
really? So that's
Oh,
his
that's
thing.
his shit. That's his opening line. How much do you pay for rent? And
Amazing.
rather than people say, yo, get the fuck out of here, there's people like, oh, I pay $3,500. I pay $4,700. And then he's like, yo, can I get a tour of your house? And more often than not, I mean, obviously, this is all content, so we don't see what's scrapped. But they're like, okay, I'm sure. And they walk them through. And then, you know, what happens is what it looks like. There's a couple of things I want to talk about, but what it looks like is like, you know, this young dude's asking you whatever. I don't even know if he's a young cat. This cat's asking you how much you pay for rent. Then he wants to see your space. And then you walk him around. And there's a point of pride, you know, sometimes, especially if you feel like you're getting a deal, or if you somebody, especially in New York, if you're doing the most with a minimal space that you could see how people live and how much they pay. But the thing is, you're also bringing the internet in your house. So, you know, so the comments are crazy. Everybody like 4,000 a month for that. That's some bullshit. You know, you're gonna get a lot of that. And while I appreciate the transparency of it all, I don't know. I don't see it. I don't know that many people. I gotta know somebody to really ask them how much they pay for rent. Like for real, like it just feels like maybe I'm old fashioned. You know, that feels intrusive. If you want to volunteer that information, that's fine. But like, I'm not gonna be the one. Like, yo, so what? How much is this? What you paying for
This
this?
definitely feels like a line overstepping for
It
sure.
is, and I think it's cultural too.
I was gonna say that it is Let me tell you, it is cultural because I do know folks who very comfortably and openly talk about, or just will talk about how much they make,
right,
and how much they are, what their living expenses are like. Yeah. You know, I mean, and I mean, I remember working, I'm not going to name any names, but I remember at one of my, somewhere where I worked a few, several years back, one of the heads there, like one of the upper level folks, just straight up asking me, I had started leasing a new car. Just, I, you know, so I drove it to the office and I don't know how it came up, but she just straight up asked me how much I paid for it. And, right. And with like a couple of other people sitting around, and I was like, and I'm trying to remember how I responded. I was really thrown off. I think I actually answered her because I didn't know what else to do.
Right.
I was so thrown off. I was like, this much. And then when she left, I looked around at the other, you know, coworkers, kind of like, did that really happen? Yeah. I mean, and they picked up on it, but it was just the strangest thing. But yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Some people seem to be very comfortable with that. But can I, but you know, I think we all need to get more comfortable with those conversations, to be honest.
That's my conflict, because I think that the more you know, the better you can navigate. You know, like, oh, I've seen the benefit of that information. It is uncomfortable, because I think that, I don't know. I mean, I guess I don't want to say just a blanket statement if you come up with not a lot, but I do feel as though finances, culturally, I do feel like culturally finances are somewhat a step too far oftentimes. You know what I mean? And with that, with people being in the dark, you could kind of be taken advantage of.
Absolutely.
Somebody works the same job as you, is making damn near twice as much as you do. And the fact that y'all never had this conversation, you would never know. And
exactly.
So it's an interesting moment, but I don't know if I'm just walking the block and a white guy comes up to me and says, yo, how much you rent? You know what I mean? Can I see your spot? Not with that camera. You could come through, but yeah, keep the internet outside. We could have a conversation, but,
right. Yeah. I somehow missed this, but now I'm interested. So I feel like I'm gonna have to find his channel.
Check him out. Yeah. Caleb Simpson is the dude's name. It's interesting. It's interesting. I have noticed though, like particularly when I moved into comedy, pay transparency was like, it was upfront. Like there's a lot of that. And it became very much organic to the conversation. Because, again, like, you know, it's a lot of work for hire situations. So it's kind of like, yo, so what are they paying you? Really? Nah, I think you could get this or you could do that. And it's valuable. It's right. valuable. And it's the more you do it, the less sensitive it is. The pocket watching shit kind of wears down a little bit. But yeah, I just thought that was very interesting.
Well, I think it's important, too, because it contributes to sort of managing the market, because you know, if someone agrees to do certain, like to do a service or whatever for less, then it affects everyone else,
right?
You know, so you kind of have to like be on the same page a bit. So I think it is important to share that information. I think especially probably even more so in the gig economy. It's important to do that.
Wait, said it on the gig economy.
In the gig economy.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
that's crazy. What was I gonna ask you? What you think of this? I seen a little clip of Usher and Keke Palmer. By the time this comes out, Usher and Keke Palmer will be putting out a video for Usher's record Boyfriend. Keke Palmer is in it. I'm not sure if she's featured on the track, but it's definitely leveraging the you know, all of the attention that came about from the Vegas situation between her and her baby father. You right. know, it seems a little opportunistic. I mean, they're entertainers, but I mean, kind of the first thing I thought was this is diabolical and at what cost? what's going on here? But what are your thoughts? What do you think of this?
My first thought was, okay, so what's the status of her relationship with her baby's father? What is the status? We haven't heard anything since really he got dragged.
Yeah.
He got dragged. And by the way, that was such a big, you were really able to see how famous she is, because the way that travel was crazy. I mean, it was in every corner. It hit every corner of the internet.
Yeah.
Which I found to be pretty interesting.
She's beloved. It's not even on the low no more. I think that shows like Keke Palmer been around for a long time, and it's a lot of people fuck with her.
Yeah. That was interesting. But yeah, so that was my first question. Okay, what's going on with those two? And then my second was, okay, but also what it made me wonder is, was that part of a rollout?
Mm-hmm.
Was that intentional?
Right, which is crazy. That's why I say it's diabolical, because this could have all been a brainstorming meeting in a conference room 3 months ago. So this is what we're going to do. You're going to take an L. This is what's going to happen. No, but this is the ROI on that L. I don't know. I just feel like I hope it's not that.
I don't know what the comeback story would be for him.
Yeah, no, it's terrible. Yeah. It's terrible for him.
How does he come back in the picture with his head on, you know, his head up no longer looking crazy?
Yeah.
After taking that dragging. Or maybe they didn't expect the drag to be so
substantial.
The response to be so intense.
Yeah, they was like, whoa. Oh, shit. We got to get on a conference call. This is not what we anticipated. I'm so sorry. Right. Yeah. Right. We got to pivot. Yeah, no, that's fucked up. It's unless at the end of the video, Usher rips off a mask and it's the baby's father. That's the only way my man could come back into the fold. But yeah, it's looking kind of crazy. We'll see what it is.
Keke is. Yeah. I mean, she wasn't. It was a little strange after, because I don't think we ever heard anything from her. But she posted some like interesting little clip after, like a video, where it almost seemed as if she was going at her baby's father.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was hard. It was, I guess, a little bit slightly subliminal. I don't know.
And it was,
but we haven't heard anything from her since. Yeah, it was a little odd. It was an odd response.
Yeah.
This is a follow up.
Right. I think this is kind of new, uncharted waters for her in this way. You know, beefing with your baby father on the internet. She might have needed to go to get some counts.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know. But we'll see what happens.
Yeah, they went there. We're gonna go there. We're gonna rumble this.
No, this is it. This is gonna work.
But is it? I mean, do you think that this might make it might not be? I don't know. I just wonder what direction it'll go in. Like, is it gonna be a good look for Ursh?
I think depends on how he do it. I think that young Ursh is so savvy about how he moves out here that, you know, he's a showman, you know? So I think that he's not going to do anything. He's leaning into the moment. A lot of people calling him the terrorist and all of that shit. So I think he's having fun with it. I think he has the least to lose. He has the least to lose. Keke and Homie, sad that my man's name is Homie, but that's his government name. But Keke and Homie, they got a real child together. So there's real stakes there. That shit, that's going
to real life problems.
Absolutely. This is going to be around after, you know, the director yells cut, you know?
Right.
This shit is,
exactly.
You know, so we'll see what's what. But
I mean, this is another level of maybe, I don't know, revenge.
Yeah, but is it? I mean, is I? Yeah, I guess
that
it's revenge.
Trying to regulate, and she's like, "Oh no! Yeah. Not only can you not regulate, but this right. is what happens when you try to."
Right. This is look at you. Nathan got exactly. Look at you. Look at what. You know what I mean? Yeah, that's crazy. That shit
you
is,
tried to regulate? Uh-huh. Okay.
Oh yeah, now I gotta make an example out of you. She's like Duda. I wish you watched the shot. Kiki's God. Like Duda now. And they both from Chicago. Shit. But anyway, so that's that. But yo, tell the audience a little bit about Sir Labs and the podcast. Did I pronounce it right? Because I
Yeah, okay. It's
Cyril Lab. Cyril, okay.
Yeah, I know. That's okay. A tough one. And I have definitely thought long and hard about whether I should keep that name or not, just because of the fact that it is not easy to pronounce. Number one, and number two, people don't necessarily know what it means. But Cyril means sister in French.
Mm-hmm.
And I named it that for a couple different reasons. Number one, French is my second language. I'm half Haitian. French is one of the languages of Haiti. So it just felt like, okay, maybe mm-hmm. not sister, let's make it Cyril, you know, just to add a little twist. Second, it came out of a brainstorming session that I had with my actual sister. So it just felt like, okay, well, it came from two sisters sort of collaborating. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It emerged from that. So so that was one factor. And then lastly, it has to do with fostering sisterhood mm-hmm. among creative women. Right. So or just in the creative community. So the podcast highlights creative women who are driving culture and trends from behind the scenes. So it's the women that, for instance, you'll see, we talked about a little bit earlier, like we talked about what Lauryn Hill, her style and what she was wearing. And I mentioned the person who designed her piece mm-hmm. and that person is Bria Stinson.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you have someone like Lauryn, huge artist, and has the attention of major audiences, and you're talking about her piece. And so what we're doing is we're talking to the person who, I mean, you're talking about what she has on, about her style. And so what we're doing is we're talking to the person who's responsible for that. And so I've actually had Bria Stinson, who is a stylist and designer mm-hmm. And who designed the piece for Lauryn Hill. I've actually had her on my podcast. So we highlight the women who are creatives and who are behind artists and campaigns and brands, and we see their work every day. You know, we see it on whether it's like a makeup artist who's worked with Rihanna, who we've had, or we see the work of a costume designer who we've had, a costume designer who's worked on, you know, like shows that we watch. So we have, those are the kind of women that we highlight, and we highlight them because those are fields that you don't always know that they exist. So it's to just educate people that these are jobs that you can have. And number two, we talk to them about their journey because often there's not a blueprint for a lot of these people. There's not mm-hmm. a blueprint for these sorts of jobs. So by talking to them about their journeys, you can learn about just, it's educational in terms of learning, you know, about how, if you're interested in pursuing, you know, any of these jobs, it's informative and, you know, you'll learn about what their journey is and you can apply it to your own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's dope. It's a great podcast and it's a dope platform and it's an extension of stuff you've been doing for a long time. So I think that,
yeah.
You know,
yeah, I feel like, you know, I always say that I'm a credit junkie in the sense of from my early days, just in my childhood, I was always reading the credits. Who mm-hmm. was behind everything? Who are the people behind the scenes? Who's responsible for who's the A&R, who's the photographer, who's the creative director, you know, like the thank yous, who was involved. So I've always just had been interested. I've always been fascinated. I've always wanted to understand what those jobs are. So I think I've just always wanted to that's just always been very interesting to me, like what those jobs are and who those people are and like kind of what inspires them, you know, who are they? You know what I mean? Because they really are the ones who are like introducing new trends. Like when that person is like, you know, oh, I'm going to design this look and then Rihanna wears it, Rihanna is going to, that automatically introduces a new trend, you know, or inspires a new trend. And that's from that person, that it's from the mind of that particular person who's just like being creative and in the moment, like, oh, this could be cool. You know what I mean? So, yeah.
Nah, that's dope. Yeah. It definitely exposes people to things that, you know, like you said, you being a credit junkie, it exposes people to some of the opportunities and, you know, positions that they may not know, they may not see out in the front, out in the forefront. Not to say that there aren't people that are in the forefront out there, but it's just like to show the large array of roles and opportunities that are within the industry and beyond. So yeah,
Exactly.
nah, that's dope. That's dope. People should check it out. You got a live event coming up with this.
I do. I do. I'm having it at Soho House, and it's going to feature four panelists, and they represent different mediums. They work in different areas, but same thing, same theme. They're all behind the scenes. One is a costume designer. I have two. A production team made up of two women. I have a director and I have a performance coach. Yeah.
Dope, 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 dope. That's what's up. Well, y'all should check that out. Nicole, what else do you have coming up? I know you just talked about the pod, talked about the event. If you want some people to follow you, where could they find you? What do you want them to know about? What's on the horizon?
The podcast is really it. I would love it if you followed. I feel like there's something for everyone. I launched it during the pandemic and I probably maybe recorded 12 episodes and then recently decided to write and it slowed. I slowed down. I kind of like took a break and then I relaunched it. So I'm three episodes in and from the time of relaunching. So I have a lot of different interviews there, a lot of conversations, and I feel like there's something for everyone. So yeah, just, you know, check that out and it'll be amazing if you also subscribed because I need some subscribers. Yeah, I mean that's really it. That's kind of what I've been focused on mainly these days.
That's what's up. That's what's up. Y'all check it out. Go subscribe. You know, get in tune. It's worth your time. Get in tune. It was great having you here today, Nicole. It was long
Thank
overdue.
you.
Glad
I
to,
know, I
you know,
know. It's
you
like, when
know.
are they gonna ask me to be on?
I know. Nah, we yeah, nah, that's we've shouted you out plenty of times and I've thought about it a bunch of times. I'm terrible about
I
booking
appreciate
people,
it.
but yeah, I'm glad you could come through.
It was fun.
Co-host with the kid. Look, I just want to let y'all know this Thursday I'm at New York Comedy Club in the East Village. I'm on the 10:15 show. And Saturday, August 19th, if you are in Baltimore or the DMV area, even though I just heard Baltimore, I don't like to be considered the DMV. But if you're in that vicinity, come out to the Port in Baltimore. I'll be there Saturday. I got two shows, 7 p.m. and 9:30 p.m. I haven't been to Baltimore in a minute. I'm trying to sell that shit out, you know. So if you're from Baltimore, put that on your TD list. That was terrible. But that is it. As always, tell a friend to tell a friend
And even an enemy.
to get into conversation. We out.
Hello, hello, hello.